Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this episode, we speak to adopter Richard, who, with his partner, adopted an older child. Richard discusses how he arrived at adoption and offers some fantastic insights into the preparation and assessment of adoptive parents, as well as his passion to see older children adopted. We hope you find it interesting, and as always, if you've experienced of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook or Twitter page, or you can email us at aandfpodcast@gmail.com.
My name is Richard. We are a pair of adopters. I'm just representing one half of that. We adopted our son, it's 9 years ago now. We adopted him when he was turning 7 years old. That was definitely not our plan. And our whole world turned upside down, but of course we've looked back, but each time that we look back with a smile.
Cool. So if I can take you right back to the beginning then, what led you to adoption? Why did you want to adopt?
Okay, so my journey goes back quite some distance. From a very early age, I knew that I wanted to be a parent. I knew that that was a big part of my character and my being, I suppose. At the age of 19, I came out as gay, and a big part of me didn't want to come out because in my mind at that time, by coming out, it meant that I would never be able to be a parent. And there was a point of me that thought, actually, is it better to stay in the closet and live a lie to still be a parent? So I kind of did that internal battle for quite some time. And then I spoke with a friend after I'd decided to come out. I spoke to a friend and I said to her, you know, I'm really quite sad because this now means I won't be a parent. To which she really lost her temper at me and said, don't be so ridiculous. You can still be a parent. There are loads of options. Surrogacy, you can adopt. And I said, oh, but I've not made a choice to be gay, but I have made a choice to be open about that and live that life. If I now have a child, am I subjecting them to bullying or difficulties because they've got a gay parent? To which she again really lost her temper with me and said, children are bullied for being fat, thin, wearing glasses, not wearing glasses, being ginger. She said, it doesn't matter. Children are cruel. They'll find a reason to bully another child. She said, your role and responsibility is to give ammunition to that child to be strong enough to challenge that. So that sort of started my journey to thinking about that. And then I sort of explored relationships, and I was in a long-term relationship, and we started talking about children, and that partner said, no, not for me. So I subsequently ended that relationship and got into a new relationship with my current husband. And very early on, I was like, look, I'm not wasting any time with this. I want children. Is children on the cards for you? And he was like, well, I haven't really given it any thought. Start thinking, because this is definitely what's happening. And then over our sort of time together, we would just bring it up and talk about it. And over time, he said, actually, the more I think about it, the more I think that's a really lovely idea. And for us at that time, we had a number of people that offered surrogacy, which was a beautiful, beautiful offer. But I think at that time, we said, actually, there are so many children out there already. We don't need to add to the population. Instead, we can help the existing population. And we got married in 2010. And we said, right, now let's look at this. Let's explore adoption. And we started going down the road of adoption. And yeah, that's kind of what took us along that way and got us to the road of adoption.
I mean, those timings take you really close to the change in the law. You know, was it 2008, the Equality Act, that came out and
So you are, I mean, now we look back and we think, crikey, it's adoption amongst same-sex couples and same-sex, you know, and gay, you know, people is just accepted. It's not even questioned anymore. But then, you know, 2010, was it a different world? You know, how did the, you know, people around you, friends, family, passers-by, respond to that news?
So it was actually really lovely. So I remember an example of when we went to our first preparation training session, and I remember we were in the car and we were late because we were stuck in traffic and we was getting quite stressed out. And I remember my husband and I kind of sitting there going, right, we need to really stand out from the crowd. We need to make sure that people notice us and that we're standing out as being really cracking parents, and we're going to do this. And at no point were we thinking, well, of course we're going to stand out in the crowd because we're the only gay couple in the room.
Yeah.
we were still thinking that we had to be different. And then sort of my family in particular, they were amazing. They were so supportive, so on board, really encouraged it and wanted to be a part of that journey from the off. My mum often reflects on it and says, you know, for her, she found our adoption process very much to be like the pregnancy process, and she followed it that way. All of our friends that we spoke to, they all responded really positively to it. Passers-by, I remember in the early days of taking on Little Dude, I remember just sort of wondering if I would get sort of sideways glances, backward glances, people just noticing that we were a family. And I guess we were so caught up in being a family that if I did get any glances, I certainly didn't recognize it, because we were so in our world, and everyone was just so happy with it all and so on board with it. So obviously along the way, we've had a couple of near misses with a couple of narrow-minded people, but I genuinely think that's the same for any parent, you know, or any human actually, you'd walk through life and you'd bump into someone that doesn't necessarily like you for whatever reason. So you might cross paths in that way, but I don't feel like we've had an extreme set of circumstances where it's been a big deal, which has been really, really quite lovely, actually, really quite refreshing.
I mean, yeah, it's in some ways it's normalized really quickly, hasn't it? We've moved. I just think across my lifespan, the last 20 years, we've reached a point where it's really normalized. So I'd like to ask you a bit about the process of being approved as well. I mean, I know it's 10 years ago, but it's under the same sort of legislative framework.
Yeah.
A lot of people often talk about it being, some people find it easy, some people find it quite invasive. What was your experience, you know, you and your partner?
So I thoroughly enjoyed the assessment process. We were saying earlier that I can talk for England, and when we had the assessment, I just saw it as almost like a therapy session, and like they would come over and they would just talk, and I'd be like, this is fantastic, I get to pour my heart out and you're writing it down, it's brilliant. So I really liked it. I found it exhausting at certain points when I was asked certain parts of my history or background, and I found that there were certain parts that I genuinely didn't remember. And I had this mass worry of, oh, if I don't remember that traumatic time in my life, is it almost, you're going to be worried that I've blocked it out?
Yeah.
When I haven't blocked it out, I've just completely forgotten it. So I found myself kind of just talking and talking and talking and hoping that within 1,000 words, 3 of them were usable. And then for my husband, he's very much sort of process driven. So if he can see why something is being asked, he's fine. If he can see efficiency, he's all good. If he's kind of in a meeting and he uses the term wafty, if things are just sort of fluffy and not going anywhere, he sees that as a bit of a waste of his time. So when they were quite structured sessions, he was on board with it, he liked it, he was all okay. If they started talking about feelings and emotions, he was like, yeah, do you know what? I don't see where this is going. He's quite avoidant by nature. So he's very much structure, efficiency. I want it this way and this way. I remember our social worker had to cancel one of our sessions at the last minute. And I remember him being quite cross about that. He held it together when the phone call happened, but he got off the phone and then phoned me and he was livid. He was like, how inefficient could you be to have a diary that doesn't work and you've got these appointments and now you're not doing it? What a ridiculous... And he was so angry. I was like, you didn't say that though, right? No, I was good. So yeah, so we both found it very different. If they asked a question, much like what's just happened here, you've asked a question, I had to remind myself to stop. Whereas he would have finished 2 minutes after you asked and gone, but this is how I found the process. I mean, and he would stop.
It's interesting you describing the how you both sort of responded and reacted and sort of navigated the process. But was there a sense of the stakes being really high for you? Because obviously you'd had that since day one. You've wanted to be a dad.
Mm.
And it all sort of hangs on this. Did that play into it?
That played into it massively. And I think there was an additional pressure because after our preparation group, that's where we'd seen the profile of Little Dude. And we'd gone, right, well, that's the one. So we were being approved and matched at the same time.
Yeah.
Every single sort of session that we had, we would conclude it with our social worker and say, have we said anything that's made you think that we can't do this? Have we given you any cause for concern? Because it was exactly that. It felt like you could say anything and it could go awful for us.
Mm.
And we had that from our, certainly in our agency, this has changed, but the way it started for us, when you would demonstrate that you were interested, you'd then go to an information event and then they'd send a social worker out to do an initial assessment with you. And I remember talking to her then and we was talking away and you got a feeling everything was going really, really well. And she sort of said to us, oh, have you, as a couple, have you ever had to overcome any sort of troubling or difficult times? And we were like, oh, actually, yeah, we have. We recently both, because of the process, we decided to stop smoking and we gave up, but we did it alone. We didn't use any doctors. We just did it with our own willpower and we helped each other. And we did that a couple of months ago. And as soon as we're talking, I watched her entire body language dropped and the pen went down and she just slumped. I was like, we've said something wrong, haven't we? And she's like, you need to be non-smokers for an entire year before we consider you to be non-smokers. You haven't done that and you've not got proof of when you stopped. And we was like, well, we didn't say when we stopped, surely. And she was like, I'm going to need to speak to my manager to see if we're allowed to take you forward. So each time that we was having our assessment, I kept thinking back to that moment where just something that I thought was a real great story put us right to the edge where it could have all stopped. So yeah, there was a definite sense of, I'll say anxiety of, if I say the wrong thing, you hold all the power to not only stop me going through the process, but also stop my dream of becoming a dad to this young man. So it was enormous amounts of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say this is you, but I think that sometimes adopters can, or prospective adopters can then sort of slip into saying, I'm going to say the right thing.
Absolutely. And there was a big part of that for us, actually. And my husband, as an avoidant character, when we were going through the process, we identified that during his early years, he'd actually suffered minor emotional abuse in his family home. And he kind of found that he didn't want to share that with our social worker, because he said, oh, if I start sharing that, they're going to think that I can't cope, and they're going to think I can't deal with it, and they're going to put us on hold. So for a few sessions, he refused to delve into that, and he would only ever skim the surface of his early years. I remember talking to him. I said, they're not getting you. They're not getting a real read of you. So, I'm telling you, it's going to go wrong. No, they don't need to know. I said, our next session, I said, either you tell them or I'm telling them, because this is going to go wrong, because you're trying to make it go right. You're trying to be a yes man. Yeah. And that's not what they need. And I remember we was at the next session, and I sort of gave him the eyes of, you will do this. And he gave me the eyes of, I'm not doing this. So I completely threw him under the bus.
That's fair.
I said, look, we haven't talked about this. This came out when we was on our prep. And our social worker, she dropped her pen and she looked at him. She said, for goodness sake, she said, now I get it. She said, I've really struggled to understand you and try and get a read on you. She said, I've been talking to my manager because I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't work out what it was. She said, now all of your characteristics fit for me in my head. And actually, I get where you're coming from and all of your strengths. And from that moment on, their relationship just got stronger and stronger. But it's exactly that. And I desperately tell any adopter or prospective adopter that I speak to, I'm like, just be you, be honest, and get out as quickly as you can, because that's how it goes wrong, isn't it? If you put out a fake person, they're going to give you a match that isn't, that's not for you. It's for your social media version. So we worked really hard to avoid doing that. I remember when little dude's social worker first came out to meet us, and she talked to us about how much time off we could have from work. And my husband was like, oh, you know, I work for a family business, so we're adopting little dude. He is of school age, so as soon as he's in school, I'm going to be working throughout the day, but for all intents and purposes, I'm self-employed and I won't be at work. And she was like, no, that's not okay. You need to stay off for a year. And he was like, okay, what is it you want me to do whilst he's at school? Just sit at home baking cookies? What are we hoping to achieve here?
Yeah.
And she pushed back and she was like, no, this is our stipulation. This is our rules. And he was really good, because he said, okay, you need to explain to me why that is, what you're hoping to achieve, and what we're doing this for. He said, and actually, if this is going to be a problem, we should stop now, because we're not changing this. This is what you get with us. So if we're not good enough, that's fine, but we'll end the meeting now. So he was quite good at actually not being what she was telling him she wanted him to be, and actually being the real version of us. And she was quite thrown by that, but I think it actually, again, it played to our strengths.
Yeah, I mean, my experience is that if you can give legitimate reasons and you can articulate them and rationalize them, then often you'll discover that the policies are just kind of catch-alls. And if it's not the law, if it's a policy, then it can be changed.
Exactly. And for the right reasons. Like he said at this meeting, he was like, well, she said, oh, we need our parents to stay at home to, you know, our children need to have that stability. And I turned around and went, yeah, but the first part of stability is making sure you've got a roof over your head. And in order to do that, I need to work so I can pay the bills. That's what security looks like.
Yeah.
So I think I think it took us a while, but after time, we grew confident in saying, actually, yes, we know that we want this, but we also know that you want us. So we're going to be honest with each other, because that's how it's going to be healthy for everyone.
And some families really struggle to get to that point where they feel they can push back, and then there's this sort of fracture in the relationship, or there's this sort of ongoing tension about what families really want to do and what they don't do. So that's interesting to see how you articulate that, and your experience is really helpful. So I'm going to move you on, because as you say, one of these questions could be a full podcast. I said that in the nicest possible way, of course.
I appreciate that.
Excellent. There you go. So the next question really is in relation to, then you move to this position where there's a match, and I presume, I know you've talked about panels in your own podcast, so that's, people can go there and find about what you say about panels. So tell me about the experience of having this little dude come into your house, and also, I guess the question before that is, you spoke earlier, before we recorded, you were mentioning about your kind of this passion, really, to see older children. And where does that fit into this picture?
So I guess the passion comes from when I first came into the process, I'd say a two-year-old. I was convinced I wanted a two-year-old. I wanted to avoid the real young baby stage, because I didn't think I'd be particularly good at that. But I wanted a child as young as possible, because I came into the process thinking the younger they are, the less trauma they've gone through, and the easier it will be. And I can also mold them into a mini version of myself. And that is how I came into the process.
That's what I'm going to say. I'm beyond brutally honest. That's all about you, isn't it?
100%.
Sorry.
And I talk about that as I came into the process naive and selfish.
Yeah.
I came into it wanting everything. I wanted to be a parent. But I wanted to be my version of a parent.
Yeah.
And in a completely selfish way, I wasn't thinking about the child. I wasn't thinking about any of the experiences they've been through. I was thinking about it being as easy a starting block for me. And I came into that with that sort of mindset. My husband was more like, should we go a little bit older? So as they're like a real human and we can talk to them and we can get a bit of backwards and forwards. And I was like, oh, let's see. And when we saw little Drew's profile, him almost turning seven, a week after he moved in with us, it was like, well, this is really quite different to what we had planned. And I had, leading up to it, I had all of these things, and I was like, I always wanted to do bedtime, story time, bath time, getting him dressed, all of these things. And I'm thinking, he's seven. He's not going to need any of that. He's seven. He's only a year away from going to university. And I had it in my head that sort of as a seven-year-old, I would miss out on all these experiences. He wouldn't need me for as long. But do you know what? He'd come into my world and he'd grabbed hold of something. So it was worth it. It was going to be all right. And I remember meeting him for the first time and seeing that here was this young person that wasn't thinking about all of the trauma, wasn't thinking about all of the nonsense that goes on in the world. Instead, he was sitting there going, I've got two tall people that have picked me and want to have fun with me. This is fantastic. And more to that as well, he was like, well, I'm meeting two people that have, they just want to have fun. And I have missed out on experiences with them. So all of those things that I was worried about missing, he had already missed as well. Now, he'd had like story time, he'd had bath times, bedtime, he'd had all of those things with his foster family and some with his birth family, but he'd never had it with us. And he desperately wanted that with us. So we got to experience all of these incredible moments together, and we had all of our firsts together, and they were just so, so wonderful and so exciting. And I got to live out every one of my dreams of this utopian vision of being a parent. I got to experience those things, and I got to enjoy those things. Obviously, challenges were in there as well. But the beauty was, there were challenges, but I was able to talk to little dude about it. And I was able to say to him, look, I am brand new at this. I've never done it. I don't know what I'm doing, and I am rubbish at this. Give me some time here. And he was able to say sort of some things in return. Obviously, he couldn't put into words and articulate it as well as a full-grown adult. But he was still able to articulate some of those feelings that he was having. And when we could play the guessing and wondering game, you know, I guess it's a bit scary moving in with us, and I wonder if it's making you feel this way.
Yeah.
He was then able to answer that and go, yeah, that is what it's like. So, yeah, it changed from sort of, as soon as I saw his profile, it changed from being a me show to then becoming a him show. It then became, instead of me looking for a child for me to become a parent, I found a child that was looking for a family, and he came on board and made us a family, you know? And that was quite the turning point. And I guess that's what I've always wanted to share with other people. I've always wanted people to go, look, I came into it close-minded, but the second I allowed just a crack in the door of my mind, that was it. My world just opened up massively. And I want other adopters to think the same and think, well, ask that question of, why am I thinking of this age? Why am I thinking of just me here? What could I offer, and who could I offer that to? If I'm saying no to this, why? And just to have the confidence to challenge yourself, really, and ask yourself, well, could we do this differently? Would it work? And my experience has shown that it has.
Well, that was really honest, and it was a bit of a rude question, really, but I think you articulated that really well.
So, I like the question. It was good.
All right. Okay. I'll keep going. I'll go all Jeremy Paxman on you. So then sort of going on to moving on, and life develops. And what's been your experience of adoption, you know, moving into the, you know, adolescence and all of those experiences that often we'd sort of slip by a lot of people who are coming to adoption, because it's often very focused on smaller children, but actually... Mm. Tell me about, you know, this little boy who became a teenager really quickly, and then 10 years ago, so yeah. Now he's a young man, isn't he? He's a young adult.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, obviously, at times it's been trial by fire, and you walk into things and you go, oh, okay, not entirely sure how I'm going to deal with this one. But I guess in a really nice way, I look at those moments and go, but that's parenting, right? You know, I speak to my mum, and I talk about when we went off to senior school and how did that feel? And she was like, oh, I felt nervous. You'd gone from being my little baby to now you're off and you're walking to school on your own. And that transition, it's almost instant, and it's horrific. And it's like, that's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, that was the exact same thing. And little dude, as he transitioned into going to school and started, I think at primary school, children, and I mean this, it will sound horrible, but I mean it in a nice way. Children are narcissistic. They think of themselves and their own little bubble.
Yeah.
For a lot of time, if you ask them where their teacher lived, it would be like, at the school. They don't have a life outside of this place.
Yes.
When they go to senior school, they start realizing, oh, actually, there's a broader world out here. And they meet people that have come from different walks of life, who have got different views, and start influencing. And you have to kind of, in a way, you have to let them go a little bit, but still keep them close enough that you're keeping a watchful eye. And I talked to Little Dude about this probably about 6 months, a year ago now, because he wasn't going out, and he also goes to a school where he has to commute into the school. So he wasn't having friends over all the time. He wasn't going to friends' places all the time. He wasn't going out and playing out like I used to play out. And he just wasn't. It's like, okay, well, when's this happening? Well, recently he's formed these friendships of people local to him, and he's started to go out. And I've then gone into a complete tailspin of, where is he going? What's happening? How safe is he right now? And I clamped down really, really. I battened down the hatches at those points. I was like, no, I'm not comfortable with this. And I struggled. And my husband's like, if you carry on doing this, you're just going to suffocate him. And actually, that's when he'll push away. So you need to let him go a bit and actually let him be himself. And I talked to Little Dude about that. And I said, we're going through a transition, but it's actually my transition, not yours. I said, the transition that we're going through is you don't need me as much as you did. And I need to know that. And I need to feel confident that I've given you the skills to go off into life and be okay. And I needed to let go. I needed to be able to go, okay, I can do this. And that was a tough transition for myself. I'm getting there.
Well, that's really interesting. You've made me think something to reflect upon my own experience. One of my children was just nearly six, like a week of six. And you miss an enormous part of their childhood. So you're catapulted into these issues that seemed like they should be further away. And so that they've literally, you know, they've been growing since they were born. Then it's nothing new to them, but for us, it's a premature adolescence, it's a premature young adulthood, it's a premature adulthood. So that is one unique aspect of adopting older children, especially if you've had no other children as well. Have you never been tempted to adopt other children?
Oh, I have.
On a daily basis.
I watched The Sound of Music and I was like, that looks like a perfect setup. Let's do the Von Trapps. Let's go for it. But my husband was definitely like, no, I think, you know, we need to focus on being good at one. And over the years, I've talked about looking into fostering. Mm-hmm. And we've explored that. I've had concerns that may sort of mess up the balance that we've got in the home. And as much as I think that we'd be good at it, I also don't want to do damage to what we've got.
Yeah.
Now, it might actually strengthen what we've got, but in the same breath, I don't know. So as soon as Little Dude got to senior school, that's when I stopped going down the road of asking for more. I said, actually, he's now transitioned to senior school, and I think that could be too difficult for him. We did explore. There was a little boy that I'd sort of come to be aware of through delivering some training, and I was like, yeah, he could fit in our family really, really well. And it took me a couple of months of wearing my husband down, going, yeah, there was this really lovely boy. Oh, and just dropping little hints every now and then. In the end, he was like, show me the DVD. Let's look. And we did. And he was like, I get it. Let's explore. But the agency actually said, look, the age bracket, it's too close. It wouldn't work. You're not necessarily geared up for it. I was like, okay. I tried, I think, a total of three times and with three different managers to get a different answer on that. But in the end, he went on to be adopted by his foster family. So I was like, do you know what? He had a good end to the story. Yeah. The the time I approached it on the last time, he was still waiting and they was going to change his plan to long-term foster care. And that's when I got really cross with the agency. I said, no, we're definitely a better option than that. So explore us again. I was always open to more, and I want to always be a part of the adoption community, and I want to see as many children placed as I possibly can. I once described it as out there, I've got all of these faceless children that I want to help, and I want to put a face on one and find a family for them. Mm. And when we talked before, and I said, you know, my ambition is to get adopters to think broader and open their mind to other children. That's where that comes from. I have a superhero complex. I want to save the world. I often say, if I won like big on the lottery, I wouldn't open Bernardo's. I'd open Ricardo's. And just yeah. So I'd love to do more.
I mean, that, it's interesting because it's quite observable, isn't it? That lots of people who are adoptive parents then go on to be sort of involved, and, you know, some like myself go on to be qualified and find themselves kind of woven into the system that they had travelled through at some point. And probably like you, I get lots of adopters coming and saying, how can I help? What can I do? Point me in the right direction.
Yeah.
So what do you think that's all about?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
I think certainly, so for me, how it started for me is when we went on our preparation training, and there was we had two social workers delivering training and an adopter, and she was sharing her story. And every single time that she shared a new part of her story, it resonated and it grew, and the learning just sunk in for me. And I was like, you've made this a reality. And I remember we got to sort of like the second or third session. I remember turning to my husband and I said, when we get through this, I want to do that, because her story has helped me and it's already making me feel like I'm that much closer to being prepared to be a parent. I want somebody else to feel that. Obviously, his response is, can we get through the process first before you start working for them? No, I want to do it now. And then it was then further amplified. Little dude had moved in with us. The honeymoon period ended and we had what I call the 10-hour day, which was 10 hours of real difficult, challenging behavior from little dude. Everything that I'd learned on training, it went out the window. I forgot everything that I was supposed to do. I did everything, or it felt like I did everything wrong. It all went hideously wrong. And I remember at the end of the day, I was sat on the sofa and I cried. And I was saying to my husband, I said, all I ever wanted to do was be a parent. And since 19 years old, I wanted to adopt. And look how badly I'm doing at it. And he was really good. He took me off the ledge and sort of said, look, you're fine. And it was a couple of weeks later, I was like, I never, ever want another adopter to feel that way. I don't ever want another adopter to think that they're the only one that has ever got it so badly wrong. And I think that's when it started for me of what else can I do to help somebody else realize that they're not alone. And I guess to conclude on that, I think each time that you turn to any resource within the adoption community, you always find somebody else who's willing to help. And I guess it's that feeling of paying it forward. You receive that help and it is immensely helpful. And then you come away and go, well, surely I should help somebody then. What else can I do? And I think that that's where it's born from. I think it's that element of your help made me a better parent. I wonder if I can do that for somebody else. So I think that's certainly the journey I feel I've gone on. And I think it's similar to others.
No, that's a really good answer. And thank you. It seems like a really good place to kind of conclude. our conversation. Mm. So tell me the things you're involved in and where people can kind of hook into your work. Is that the right way? your product, your influence.
I'll take that, yeah. I also host a weekly podcast. It's called Adoption Adventures. It's on all of the podcast platforms, as far as I'm aware. And I'm on all of the social medias as well, as adoption.adventures or adoption advent one on Twitter, because that was the closest I could get. But yeah, that's where people can find me.
Excellent. Well, Richard, thank you so much for your time, and I wish you well, and no doubt we'll talk again in the future.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having us on. It's been lovely. Thank you.
Excellent.